This is disc number 11.
The closest soldier casually stepped into Verna and Berdine's path. This area is restricted. Berdine, wearing a dark frown, skirted the man. Good. See to it that it stays that way. Remembering all too well that her power was next to useless in the palace, Verna stayed close on Berdine's heels. The soldier, apparently not eager to grab the moored Sith, instead blew a whistle that let out a thin, shrill sound no doubt used because such a sound would carry up the stairs to other guards on patrol. The two farthest soldiers, however, stepped together to block the pathway through the room. One of the two held up a hand, if politely, commanding them to halt. "I'm sorry, mistress, but as he said, and as you should well know, this is a restricted area." Berdine put one hand on a cocked hip. Her aegil spun into her other fist. She gestured with it as she spoke. "Since we both serve the same cause, I will not kill you where you stand. Be thankful that I'm not wearing red leather today, or I might take the time to teach you some manners. As you should be well aware, Mord Sith are personal bodyguards to the Lord Rawl himself, and we are not restricted from anywhere we choose to go." The man nodded. "I'm well aware of that, but I've not seen you around the palace for quite some time. I've been with the Lord Rawl." He cleared his throat. "Be that as it may, since you've been gone, the Commander General has tightened security in this area." "Good. As a matter of fact, I am here to see Commander General Trimac about that very subject." The man bowed his head. "Very well, mistress. Top of the stairs. Someone will be able to see to your wishes." When the two guards stepped apart, Berdine flashed an insincere smile and swept between them, Verna in tow. Crossing thick carpets of golds and blues, they came to a stairwell made of a rich, flushed, tawny marble, webbed with rust-colored veins. Verna had never seen stone quite like it. It was strikingly beautiful, with polished, vase-shaped balusters, and a wide handrail that was smooth and cool under her fingers. Changing direction at a broad landing, she spotted at the top of the stairs not just patrolling soldiers, but what appeared to be an entire army waiting for them. These were not going to be men Berdine would be able to so easily get past. "What do you think all the soldiers are doing here?" Verna asked. "Up there and then down a hallway," Berdine answered in a low voice, "is the Garden of Life. We've had trouble there in the past." That was the very reason Verna wanted to check on things. She could hear orders being passed and the sound of metal jangling as men came running. They were met at the top of the stairs by dozens of the guards, many with weapons drawn. Verna noticed that there were a lot more of the men wearing black gloves and carrying crossbows. This time, though, the crossbows were cocked and loaded with the red-fletched arrows. "Who's in charge here?" Berdine demanded of all the young faces staring at her.
"I am."
A more mature man called out as he pushed his way through the tight ring of soldiers. He had piercing blue eyes, but it was the pale scars on his cheek and jaw that caught Verna's attention. Berdine's face brightened at seeing the man.
"General Trimac!"
Men made way for him as he stepped to the fore. He deliberately took in Verna before turning his attention to Berdine. Verna thought she detected the slightest smile.
"Welcome back, Mistress Berdine. I haven't seen you for quite a while."
"Seems like forever. It's good to be home."
She lifted an introductory hand to Verna. "This is Verna Soventrine, the prelate of the Sisters of the Light. She is a personal friend of Lord Rawl and in charge of the Gifted with the Daharan forces." The man bowed his head but kept his cautious gaze on her.
"Prelate?"
"Verna, this is Commander General Trimac of the First File of the People's Palace in Dahara." "First File?"
"When he is at his palace, we are the ring of steel around Lord Rawl himself, prelate. We fall to a man before harm gets a glance at him."
His eyes shifted between the two of them.
"Because of the great distance, we can only sense that Lord Rawl is somewhere far off to the west. Would you happen to know where Lord Rawl is exactly? Any idea when he will be back with us?"
"There are a number of people wanting to know the answer to that question, General Trimac," Verna said. "I'm afraid that you will have to step to the rear of a very long line."
The man looked genuinely disappointed.
What of the war? Do you have any news?
Verna nodded. The Imperial Order has split their forces.
The soldiers glanced knowingly at one another. Trimac's face hardened with worry as he waited for her to elaborate.
The Order left a sizable part of their force on the other side of the mountains, up near Adendrill in the Midlands. We had to leave men and some of the gifted on this side of the mountains to guard the passes, so the enemy can't come over and get into Dahara. A large contingent of the Order's best troops are presently heading back down through the Midlands. We believe that their plan is to take their main force down around the far side of the mountains, and then eventually swing around and up to attack Dahara from the south. We are taking our main army south to meet the enemy.
None of the men said a word. They stood mute, showing no reaction to probably the most fateful news they had ever faced in their young lives. These were indeed men of steel. The general wiped a hand across his face, as if all their concern was distilled into him alone.
So our army coming south is close to the palace, then?
No. They are still some distance to the north. Armies don't move rapidly unless necessary. Since we don't have nearly as much distance to cover as the Order, and Jagang moves his troops at a slow pace, we felt it would be better to keep our men healthy and strong, rather than exhaust them on a long race south. Berdine and I rode on ahead because it was urgent that I examine some of the books here, on matters to do with magic. As long as I'm here, I thought I should check on things in the Garden of Life to make certain that everything is safe.
The man took a breath as he drummed his fingers on his weapons belt.
I'd like to help you, prelate, but I have orders from 3 wizards to keep everyone out of there. They were quite specific. No one, not even the gardening staff, is to be allowed to go in there.
Verna's brow tightened.
What 3 wizards?
First Wizard Durander, then Lord Rall himself, and lastly, Wizard Nathan Rall.
Nathan. She might have known he would be trying to make himself look important at the palace, no doubt dramatically playing up the part of being a gifted Rall, an ancestor to Richard. Verna wondered what other trouble the man had been mucking about in while he was at the People's Palace.
Commander General, I am a sister and prelate of the Sisters of the Light. I'm fighting on the same side as you.
Sister?
He said with an accusatorial squint-eyed glare that only an army officer could conjure up.
We had a sister visit us before, a couple years back. Remember, lads?
He glanced around at the grim faces before turning back to Verna.
Wavy, shoulder-length brown hair, about your size, prelate. She was missing the little finger on her right hand. Maybe you remember her. One of your sisters, I believe.
Odette, Verna confirmed with a nod. Lord Rall told me about the trouble you had with her. She was a fallen sister, you might say.
I don't really care what side of the Creator's grace she was on the day she visited us. I only know that she killed almost 300 men getting into the Garden of Life. 300! She killed nearly 100 more getting back out. We were helpless against her.
As his face reddened, his scars stood out all the more.
Do you know what it's like to see men dying and not be able to do a bloody thing about it? Do you know what it's like not only to be responsible for their lives, but to know that your duty is to keep her out of there and not be able to do anything to stop the threat?
Verna's gaze fell away from the man's intent blue eyes.
I'm sorry, General, but she was fighting against Lord Rall. I am not. I'm on your side. I'm fighting to stop those like her.
That may be true enough, but my orders from both Zed and Lord Rall himself, after he killed that vile woman, are that no one else is to be allowed in there. No one. If you were my own mother, I'd not be able to let you go in there.
Something didn't make sense to her. Verna cocked her head.
If Sister Odette was able to get in there, and you and your men couldn't stop her...
She lifted an eyebrow.
Then what makes you think you can stop me?
I'd not like it to come to that, but if need be, this time we have the means at hand to carry out our orders. We are no longer helpless.
Verna frowned. What are you talking about?
Commander General Trimac plucked a black glove from his belt and pulled it on, flexing his fingers to draw the snug glove all the way onto his hand. With a thumb and first finger of his gloved hand, he carefully lifted a red fletched arrow from the rack of six in a quiver at the belt of a soldier beside him. The soldier already had one of the bolts knocked in his crossbow, leaving four in the special quiver rack. Holding the bolt by the nock end, General Trimac lifted the razor-sharp steel point before Verna's face so that she could see it up close.
"This is tipped with more than steel. It's tipped with the power to take down those with magic."
"I still don't know what you are talking about."
"It's tipped with magic that is said to be able to penetrate any shield the gifted can erect."
Verna reached out and with a finger carefully touched the rear of the shaft. Pain shot up her hand and wrist before she was able to jerk her arm back. Despite her gift being diminished in the palace, she had no trouble being able to detect the powerful aura given off by the web of magic that had been spun around the deadly point. This was indeed a potent weapon. Even with their full powers, the gifted would indeed be in trouble if they encountered one of these arrows coming toward them.
"If you have these arrows, then why weren't you able to stop Sister Odette?"
"We didn't have them back then."
Verna's frown darkened.
"Then where did you get them?"
The general smiled with the satisfaction of a man who knew he would not again be defenseless against a gifted enemy.
"When Wizard Rawl was here, he asked me about our defenses. I told him about the attack by the sorceress and how we were helpless against her power. He searched the palace and found these weapons. Apparently they were in some safe place where only a wizard could retrieve them. He is the one who supplied my men with the arrows and the crossbows to fire them."
"How good of Wizard Rawl."
"Yes, it was."
The general carefully replaced the bolt in the special quiver rack that kept the arrows separated. She understood now why that was necessary. There was no telling how ancient these weapons really were, but Verna suspected that they were relics from the Great War.
"Wizard Rawl instructed us on how to handle such dangerous weapons."
He held up his hand and wiggled his gloved fingers.
"Told us that we must always wear these special gloves to handle the arrows."
He removed the glove and tucked it behind his belt with its mate. Verna clasped her hands before herself, taking a deep breath, and with it, care in how she framed her words.
"General, I have known Nathan Rawl since long before your grandmother was born. He is not always candid about the dangers involved in the things he does. Were I you, I would handle those weapons with the utmost care, and treat anything he told you about them, even casually, as a matter of life and death."
"Are you suggesting he is reckless?"
"No, not deliberately. But he often tends to downplay matters that he finds inconvenient. Besides that, he is very old and very talented, so sometimes it's easy for him to forget just how much more he knows about some very arcane subjects than most other people, or that he can do things with his gift that they aren't able to do, much less comprehend. You might say he's like an old man who forgets to tell visitors that his dog bites."
Men up and down the hall exchanged looks. Some of them lifted an elbow or a hand away from the quivers at their belts. General Trimac hooked a thumb around the hilt of the short sword in its sheath at his left hip.
"While I take seriously your warning, prelate, I hope that you will understand that I also take seriously the lives of the hundreds of my men who died the last time a sister showed up, and we were defenseless against her magic. I take seriously the lives of these men here. I don't want any such thing to happen again."
Verna wet her lips and reminded herself that the man was only doing his job. With the way the palace drained away her Han, she had an uncomfortable empathy with his feeling about being powerless.
"I understand, General Trimac." She smoothed back a wave of hair. "I, too, know the heavy weight of responsibility for the lives of others. Of course, the lives of your men are valuable, and anything that will prevent the enemy from taking those lives is worthwhile. It is in that vein that I'm advising you to be careful with weapons that are wrought with magic. Such things are not typically intended for the unsupervised use of the ungifted." The man nodded once.
We take your warning seriously.
Good. Then you should also know that what is in that room is dangerous in the extreme. It's a danger to all of us. It would be in all our interest if, while I'm here, I just make sure it's safe.
Prelate, I understand your concern, but you must understand that my orders gave me no discretion for exceptions. I simply can't allow you to go in there on your word that you are who you say you are, or that your intent is only to help us. What if you were a spy, a traitor, the keeper himself in the flesh? A sincere-looking woman though you may be, I didn't get to the rank of Commander General by letting attractive women talk me into things.
Verna was momentarily startled by being called an attractive woman in front of all these people.
But I personally can assure you that no one at all, has been in there since Lord Rawl himself was in there last. Not even Nathan Rawl went in there. Everything in the Garden of Life remains untouched.
I understand, General. It would be a long time before she ever made it back to the palace. There was no telling where Richard was or when he would return. She rubbed her fingers on her forehead as she considered the quandary. Tell you what, how about if I don't go in, and instead I just stand in the doorway, outside the Garden of Life, and look in to make sure the three boxes being held in there are safe? You can even have a dozen of your men point those deadly arrows at my back. He chewed his lip as he considered.
Men in front of you, men to the sides, and men to the back will have you under the points of their arrows, and their fingers will be on the release levers. You can look past my men through the doorway and into the Garden of Life, but you may not cross the threshold under penalty of death.
Verna didn't actually need to get close enough to touch the boxes. Truth be told, she didn't really even want to get close to them. All she really wanted to do was to make sure that they were untouched by anyone else. At the same time, she wasn't exactly comfortable with the idea of all those men being only a finger twitch away from releasing one of those deadly arrows at her. After all, the notion to check on the boxes of Ordin had only been an afterthought, being as she was already at the palace. It wasn't why she had come to the palace. Still, she was so close.
Bargain struck, General. I only need to see that they are safe, so that we all can sleep a little easier.
I'm all for sleeping easier.
Berdeen and Verna, with a knot of soldiers surrounding them, were led by Commander General Trimac down a broad passageway of polished granite. Columns spaced against the wall framed great slabs of stone, as if they were artwork. To Verna, they were visual evidence of the Creator's hand, artwork from the garden he had cultivated that was the World of Life. The sound of all the men moving along with them echoed up and down the great hallway as they passed a series of intersections that were arms of the spell form, all pulling back into the center that was the Garden of Life. They at last came to a pair of doors covered in carvings of rolling hills and forests and sheathed in gold.
Beyond is the Garden of Life, the general told her in a sober tone.
As soldiers surrounded her, raising their crossbows, the general began drawing one of the great gold doors open. Some of the men to the side and rear pointed their arrows at her head. The four men who moved in front of her leveled their crossbow bolts at her heart. She was at least relieved not to have the ones in front of her pointed at her face. She thought the whole thing was silly, but she knew that these men were dead serious, so she treated it as such. As the gold-clad door was swung wide, Verna, in lockstep with her cadre of personal assassins, shuffled closer to the opening so that she could see. She had to crane her neck and finally swish a hand to gently urge one of the men to move a little to the side so that she could have a clear view into the great room. From the rather dimly lit hallway, Verna peered inside and saw that overcast skies lit the place in all its glory through leaded windows high overhead. She was astonished to see that all the way up in the center of the People's Palace, the Garden of Life looked just like a lush garden. From what she could see,
Around the outside of the room, walkways wound their way through flower beds. The ground was littered with petals, a few still colorful reds and yellows, but most long since dried and shriveled. Beyond the flowers grew small trees, and then beyond them were short, stone, vine-covered walls. Contained within the walls was a variety of shrubs and ornamental plants, although they were in sorry shape from lack of care. Many were gangly with long, new shoots and in need of a trimming. Others were infested with invasive vines. It looked as if General Trimack had been telling the truth that no one, not even the gardeners, had been allowed into the place. At the Palace of the Prophets, they had had an indoor garden, although on a much smaller scale. There had been a system of pipes coming from collection barrels on the roof that kept the garden watered. Recognizing similar pipes in a corner, Verna realized that rainwater collected on the roof provided a constant supply of water in this place as well, or everything in the garden, lit by such wonderful light, would be dried up and dead. In the center of the expansive room was an area of shaggy lawn that swept around almost into a circle, the grass ring interrupted by a wedge of white stone. On that stone sat two short, fluted pedestals that held a slab of smooth granite. Atop the granite altar sat three boxes, their surfaces such an inky black that it almost surprised her that they didn't suck the light entirely out of the room and pull the whole world with it into the eternal darkness of the underworld. Just the sight of such sinister things made her heart feel as if it were coming up in her throat. Verna knew the three boxes as the gateway, and they were exactly what the name implied. In this case, they were together a kind of gateway between the world of the living and the world of the dead. The gateway was constructed of the magic of both worlds. If that passage between worlds were ever to be undone, the veil would be breached and the seal would be off the Nameless One, the Keeper of the Dead. Because the information had been in highly restricted books, only a few people at the Palace of the Prophets were even aware of the garden by its ancient name, the Boxes of Horden. The three boxes worked together, and together they constituted the gateway. As far as anyone at the Palace of the Prophets knew, the gateway had been lost for over 3,000 years. Everyone thought that it was gone, vanished, disappeared for good. There had even been speculation for centuries as to whether or not such a gateway had ever really existed. If such a gateway could even exist, had been the source of much heated theological debate. The gateway, the Boxes of Orden, did exist, and Verna was having trouble taking her eyes off it. It made her heart race to see such vile things. Cold sweat dampened her dress. It was small wonder that three wizards had ordered the general to allow no one into the room. Verna reconsidered her opinion of Nathan for equipping the first file with such dangerous weapons. The jeweled covering had been removed, leaving the sinister black of the boxes themselves. Because Darkin Rall had put the boxes in play and had planned to use the power of Orden to claim mastery over the world of the living. Fortunately, Richard had stopped him. Stealing the boxes now, though, wouldn't do a thief any good. Extensive information was required to understand how the magic of Orden worked and how the gateway functioned. Part of that information was contained in a book that no longer existed except in Richard's mind. That, in fact, had been part of how he had defeated Darkin Rall. In addition to vast knowledge and information, any thief would also need to have both additive and subtractive magic in order to use the gateway or to claim the power of Orden for himself. The real danger would probably be to any person foolish enough to handle such treacherous things. Verna sighed with relief at seeing the three boxes untouched, right where Richard had said he'd left them. For now, there was no safer place to keep such dangerous magic. Someday, maybe Verna could help find a way to destroy the gateway, if such a thing were even possible. But for now, it was safe. Thank you, General Trimack. I'm relieved to see that everything is as it should be. And it will stay that way, he said as he put his weight against the door. It soundlessly moved closed. No one is getting in there except Lord Rall.
Verna smiled at the man.
Good.
She glanced around at the magnificent palace around her, the illusion of permanence, peace, and security it exuded. If only it were so.
Well, I'm afraid that we need to be on our way. I have to get back to our forces. I will tell General Myford that things here at the palace are well in hand. Let us hope that Lord Rawl will be joining us soon and we can stop the Imperial Order before they ever reach this place. Prophecy says that if he joins us for the final battle, we have a chance to crush the Imperial Order, if not drive them back to the old world.
The general gave her a grim nod. May the good spirits be with you, prelate. With Berdeen at her side, Verna made her way back out of the restricted area and away from the Garden of Life. As they once again descended the stairs, she was relieved to be on her way back to the army, even if she was worried over their mission. She realized that since coming to the palace, she felt more a sense of commitment and more of a sense of connection to what had become the Daharan Empire under Richard. Even more than that, she seemed to care more about life. But if they didn't find Richard and get him to lead their forces in the battle they would face when they finally met the Imperial Order, then the mission to stop Jagang's army was suicide.
Prelate,
Berdeen said as she pushed closed the door with a snake carved on it. Verna paused and waited as the woman tapped the palm of her hand on the top of the bronze skull door handle.
What is it, Berdeen? I think I should stay here.
Stay? Verna met the moored Sith's gaze.
But why?
If Anne finds Lord Rawl and takes him to the army, he will have you and a number of other moored Sith who are there to protect him, and he will be where you say he needs to be.
But maybe she won't find him.
She must. Richard is also aware of the weight of prophecy, and he knows that he must be there at the final battle. Even if Anne doesn't find him, I have faith that he will come to join us. Berdeen shrugged with the difficulty of trying to find the right words.
Maybe, but maybe not.
Verna, I've spent a lot of time with him. He doesn't think like that. Prophecy doesn't mean as much to him as it does to you.
Verna heaved a sigh.
You said a mouthful, Berdeen. This is Lord Rawl's home, even if he never really lived here except as a captive. Even so, he has come to care about us as his people and his friends. I've spent time with him. I know how much he cares about us, and I know that he is aware of how much we all care about him. Maybe he will feel a need to come home. If he does, I think I should be here for him. He depends on me to help him with books.
With translations?
At least I like to believe he does. He makes me feel important to him anyway. I don't know, I just think I should remain at the palace in case he comes here. If he does, he will need to know that you are desperately trying to find him. He will need to know of the impending final battle.
Does your bond tell you where he is?
Berdeen gestured west.
Somewhere in that direction, but very distant.
The general said the same thing. That can only mean that Richard is at least in the new world again.
Verna found reason to smile.
At long last, that much is good to know.
The closer those with the bond are to him, the better able they will be to help you find him.
Verna considered it a moment.
Well, I will miss your company, Berdeen, but I guess you must do as you see fit, and I have to admit that what you say does make some sense. The more places we watch for him to show up, the better our chances of finding him in time.
I really think it's right for me to stay here. Besides, I want to study some of the books and try to match up some of what Kolo says. There are a few things bothering me. Maybe if I work it out, I can even help Lord Rawl to win that final battle.
Verna nodded with a sad smile.
See me out?
Of course.
Both turned to the sound of footsteps. It was another moored Sith in red leather. She was blonde and taller than Berdeen. Her piercing blue eyes took Verna in with the kind of measured calculation that betrayed utter, fearless confidence.
Nida!
Berdeen called. The woman smiled with one side of her mouth as she came to a halt. She placed a hand on Berdeen's shoulder, a gesture that Verna recognized as being as close to wild jubilation as it got among moored Sith,
except perhaps for Berdine. Nida gazed down at Berdine, her eyes drinking her in.
"Sister Berdine, it has been a while. Dahara has been lonely without you. Welcome home. It's good to be home and see your face again."
Nida's gaze slid to Verna. Berdine seemed to remember herself.
"Sister Nida, this is Verna, the prelate of the Sisters of the Light. She is a friend and advisor to Lord Rawl. Is he on his way here?"
"No, unfortunately," Berdine said.
"Are you two sisters, then?" Verna asked.
"No," Berdine said, waving a hand at the notion. "It's more like you calling the other woman of your kind sister. Nida is an old friend." Nida glanced around.
"Where is Reyna?"
Berdine's face went white at the unexpected encounter with the name. Her voice fell to a whisper.
"Reyna died."
Nida's face was unreadable.
"I didn't know, Berdine. Did she die well, with her Aegil in her hand?"
Berdine swallowed as she stared at the floor.
"She died of the plague. She fought it until her final breath, but in the end it took her. She died in Lord Rawl's arms."
Verna thought that she could detect that Nida's blue eyes were just a little more liquid as she gazed at her sister Mord Sith.
"I'm so sorry, Berdine."
Berdine looked up.
"Lord Rawl wept as she died."
By the silent but astonished look on Nida's face, Verna could see that it was unheard of for the Lord Rawl to care if a Mord Sith lived or died. By the look of wonder that surfaced, such reverence for one of them was homage of profound proportions.
"I have heard such tales about this Lord Rawl. They are really true, then?"
Berdine smiled radiantly.
"They are true."
Chapter 32.
"What are you reading that's so absorbing?" Rika asked as she used a shoulder to push the thick door closed. Zed grunted with displeasure before glancing up from the book lying open before him.
"Blank pages."
Through the round window to his left, he could see the roofs of the city of Adendril spread out far below. In the golden light of the setting sun, the city looked beautiful, but that appearance was but an illusion. With all the people gone, fleeing for their lives before the hordes of invaders, the city was no more than an empty, lifeless husk, like the shed skin of the cicadas that had recently emerged. Rika leaned toward him over the magnificent polished desk and tilted her head to see better as she peered down at the book. "It's not all blank," she announced. "You can't read something that is blank. You therefore must be reading the writing, not the blank places. You should try to be more accurate in what you say, if not more honest." Zed's frown darkened as his gaze rose to meet hers.
"Sometimes what isn't said is more meaningful than what is said. Did you ever think about that?"
"Are you asking me to keep quiet?" She set down a large wooden bowl containing his dinner. The steam, drifting up, carried the aroma of onions, garlic, vegetables, and succulent meat. It smelled distractingly delicious.
"No, demanding it."
Through the round window to his right, Zed could see the dark walls of the keep soaring high up overhead. Built into the side of the mountain that overlooked Adendril, the Wizard's Keep was nearly a mountain itself. Like the city, it too was empty, with the exception of Rika, Chase, Rachel, and himself. It wouldn't be long, though, before there would be more people in the keep. At last the keep would once again have a family living in it. The empty halls would again ring with laughter and love as they once had when countless people called the keep home. Rika contented herself with gazing around at the shelves in the round turret room. They were filled with jars and jugs in a variety of shapes and delicately colored glass vessels, some filled with ingredients for spells and, in one case, polish for the desk, the ornately carved straight-backed oak chair, the low chest beside his chair, and the bookcases. Books in a variety of languages filled most of the space on the shelves. The corner cases, with glassed doors, held more of the tomes. Rika folded her arms as she leaned close and studied some of the gilded spines. "Have you actually read all these books?"
"Of course," Zed muttered. "Many times."
"It must be boring being a wizard," she said. "You have to do too much reading and thinking.
It's easier to get answers by making people bleed.
Zed harumphed.
When a person is in agony, they may be eager to talk, but they tend to tell you what they think you want to hear, whether it's true or not.
She pulled out a volume and thumbed through it before replacing it on the shelf. That is why we are trained to question people by using the proper methods. We show them how very much more painful it is for them when they lie to us. If they understand the profoundly terrible consequences of lying, people will tell the truth.
Zed wasn't really listening to her. He was concentrating on trying to figure out what the fragment of prophecy could mean. Every single possibility he came up with only served to further ruin his appetite. The steaming bull sat waiting. He realized that she was probably hanging around, waiting for him to comment on dinner. Maybe she was waiting for a compliment.
So, what's to eat?
Stew. Zed stretched his neck a bit to glance in the wooden bowl.
Where's the biscuits?
No biscuits, stew.
I know, stew. I can see that it's stew. What I mean is, where are the biscuits to go with the stew?
Rika shrugged. I can get you some fresh bread if you'd like.
It's stew, he exclaimed with a scowl. Stew calls for real biscuits, not bread.
If I had known you wanted biscuits for dinner, I could have made you biscuits rather than the stew. You should have said something earlier.
I don't want biscuits instead of stew, Zed growled.
You change your mind a lot when you're grumpy, don't you?
Zed squinted at her with one eye.
You really are talented at torture.
She smiled, turned on a heel, and strode regally out of the small room. Zed thought that Mord Sith must strut even when they were alone. He went back to the book, trying to come at the problem from a different angle. He had only had time to read the passage again a couple of times when the latch on the door lifted and Rachel shuffled into the room carrying something in both hands. She used her foot to push the door closed.
Zed, you should put your book away now and have some supper.
Zed smiled at the child. She always made him smile. She was infectious that way.
What have you got there, Rachel?
She reached up and set the tin bowl on the desk, then stretched her arm out as she pushed it across the desk toward him.
Biscuits?
Flabbergasted, Zed rose up a little from his chair to lean over and look in the tin bowl.
What are you doing with biscuits?
Rachel's big eyes blinked at him, as if it were the strangest question she had ever heard.
They're for your supper. Rika asked me to carry them for her. She had her hands full with a bowl of stew for you and one for Chase.
You shouldn't help that woman,
Zed said with a menacing scowl as he sat back down.
She's evil.
Rachel giggled.
You're silly, Zed. Rika tells me stories about the stars. She makes pictures out of them and then tells a story about each picture.
Is that so? Well, sounds like a nice thing for her to do.
With the light fading, it was getting hard to read. Zed cast out a hand, sending a spark of his gift into the dozens of candles in the elaborate iron candelabrum. The warm light brightened the cozy little room, lighting the finely fit stone of the walls and the heavy oak beams across the ceiling. Rachel grinned, her eyes glistening with both reflected points of candlelight and with wonder. She liked seeing him light candles.
You have the bestest magic, Zed.
Zed sighed.
I wish you weren't leaving me, little one. Rika doesn't appreciate my candle-lighting trick.
You will miss me?
No, not really. I just don't want to be left alone with Rika, he said as he read the last bit again.
They will at first contest him before they plot to heal him. What could that mean?
Maybe you could get Rika to tell you some stories about the stars. Rachel began looking sad as she came around the desk. I'll miss you something awful, Zed.
Zed looked up from the book. Rachel held her arms out, wanting a hug. A smile overcame him as he scooped her into his arms. There were few things in life that felt as good as a hug from Rachel. She was a devotee of the hug, never putting less than her full enthusiasm into it.
You have good hugs, Zed.
Richard has good hugs, too.
Yes, he does. Zed remembered being in that very room so long ago
when his own daughter was about the same age as Rachel. She, too, would come to see him and want a hug. Now, all that he had left was Richard. Zed missed him terribly.
"I will miss you, little one, but before you know it, you will be back here with the rest of your family, and then you will have brothers and sisters to play with instead of just an old man."
Zed sat her on his knee.
"It will be good to have all of you at the Wizard's Keep with me. The Keep will be a joyful place, what with life in it again."
Rika said that she will never have to cook again once my mother comes here. Zed took a sip of lukewarm tea from a pewter mug on the chest beside him.
"Did she now?"
Rachel nodded. "And she said that my mother would probably make you brush your hair." She held out her hands, wanting to share a drink from his mug. He let her gulp tea. Zed cocked his head.
"Brush my hair?"
Rachel nodded with a serious look.
"It sticks all out, but I like it."
"Rachel," Chase said as he ducked in through the round top door, "are you bothering Zed again?"
Rachel shook her head.
"I brought him biscuits. Rika said he likes biscuits with his stew, and I should bring him a whole bowl full."
Chase planted his fists on his hips.
"And how is he supposed to eat his biscuits with ugly children sitting on his lap? You could scare his appetite right out of him."
Rachel giggled as she hopped down. Zed glanced at the book again.
"Are you all packed up?"
"Yes," the big man said. "I want to get an early start. We'll leave first thing in the morning, if that's still all right with you."
Zed dismissed the concern with a wave of his hand as he studied the prophecy.
"Yes, yes, the sooner you get your family back here, the better. We'll all feel better having them here, where we know they will be safe, and you will all be together."
Chase's heavy brow drew lower over his intent brown eyes.
"Zed, what's the matter? What's wrong?"
Zed looked up with a frown.
"Wrong? Nothing. Nothing is wrong." "He's just busy reading,"
Rachel assured Chase as she hugged his leg and put her head against his hip.
"Zed,"
Chase said in a demanding drawl that said he didn't believe a word of it.
"What makes you think something is wrong?"
"You haven't eaten a thing."
Chase rested one hand on the wooden handle of a long knife at his belt and with the other caressed Rachel's head of long golden blonde hair. The man probably had a dozen knives of various sizes strapped around his waist and to his legs. When he left in the morning, he would add swords and axes to the knives.
"That can only mean something is wrong."
Zed popped a biscuit in his mouth.
"There," he mumbled around the mouthful. "Satisfied?"
While Zed chewed the warm biscuit, Chase leaned down and lifted the girl's chin.
"Rachel, go to your room and finish getting your things packed up. And I expect your knives to be cleaned and sharp as well."
She nodded earnestly.
"They will be, Chase."
Rachel had had a hard life for one so young. For reasons that had always made Zed suspicious, she'd been at the center of a variety of consequential situations. When Chase had taken the orphaned girl in to raise as his own daughter, Zed himself had admonished the man to teach her to protect herself, to teach her to be like him, so that she could defend herself and stay safe. Rachel adored Chase and eagerly learned all the lessons he taught her. With one of the smaller knives she carried, she could pin a fly to a fence post at 10 paces.
"And I want you in bed early so that you will be rested," Chase told her. "I'm not carrying you if you're tired."
Rachel gave him a puzzled look.
"You carry me when I tell you I'm not tired."
Chase cast Zed a pained look before giving her a clearly feigned scowl.
"Well, tomorrow, you're just going to have to keep up on your own."
Rachel nodded seriously, unruffled by the man towering over her.
"I will."
She looked at Zed.
"Will you come and kiss me goodnight?"
"Of course,"
Zed said with a smile of his own. "I'll be in after a bit to tuck you in." He wondered if Rika would stop by her room to tell her a story. It was heartwarming to think of the Mord Sith telling a child stories about pictures made by the stars in the sky. Rachel seemed to have that effect on everyone. Chase watched through the doorway as his daughter raced off down the broad rampart. Zed had been gratified at the way she had taken to the Wizard's Keep. In short order, she had made it hers and was happily skipping through the halls that were thousands of years old. She minded well,
and never strayed from the area Zed had warned her about. She was a child who understood danger. Out on the rampart, she looked completely at ease as she paused momentarily to gaze through a crenellation down at the city below before racing off again. It seemed to Zed a wonder that such spindly legs could carry the child so swiftly. After Chase was sure that she was safely on her way, he closed the heavy oak door and stepped closer to the desk. His size made the cozy room, a room that Zed had always thought quite comfortable, seem rather cramped. "Now, what's the problem?" The man wasn't going to be satisfied until he knew more. Zed sighed and used a finger to spin the book around for the boundary warden to read.
"Take a look. You tell me."
Chase glanced at the ancient book. He lifted a page to each side and briefly took a look before setting each page back down.
"Like I said, what's the problem? It doesn't look like there is much here to worry about."
Zed arched an eyebrow.
"That's the problem."
"What do you mean?"
"It's a book of prophecy. It's supposed to have writing in it, prophecy. You can't have a book with no writing and have it still be a proper book, now can you? The writing is gone."
"Gone?"
Chase scratched a graying temple. "That doesn't make any sense. How can writing be gone? It's not like someone could steal the words right off the page." That was an interesting way to look at it, that someone had stolen the words right off the page. Having been a boundary warden most of his life until the boundary came down a few years back, Chase was the kind of man who would suspect theft before anything else. Zed hadn't considered that possibility. His mind was already rushing down the unexplored dark alley of deliberation.
"I don't know how the words could be gone," he confided as he took a sip of tea.
"What is the prophecy about?" Chase asked.
"This happens to be a book of prophecy mostly about Richard."
Chase looked completely calm, which of course meant that he was anything but.
"Are you certain it used to have writing in it?" he asked.
"If it's old, maybe you just forgot that it had blank pages. After all, when you read a book, you tend to recall the writing, not the blank pages."
"True enough."
He set the pewter mug aside.
"I can swear for certain that I remember it having writing in it, but I just don't believe it was ever mostly blank. Now it is."
Chase's expression didn't betray his feelings as he considered the mystery.
"Well, I admit that it does sound strange, but is it really a problem? Richard never was one for prophecy. He wouldn't have heeded them anyway."
Zed rose up and stabbed a finger at the book, tapping insistently.
"Chase, this book has been here in the keep for thousands of years. For thousands of years, it's had writing, prophecy, in it. I'm sure of it. Now it's suddenly blank. Does that sound trivial to you?"
Chase shrugged as he hooked his thumbs in his back pockets.
"I don't know, Zed. I'm no expert in such things. I think the day that you have to come to me for answers about books of prophecy is the day you're in big trouble. You're the wizard, you tell me."
Zed put his weight on his hands as he leaned toward the man.
"I can't recall anything that used to be in this book. I can't recall anything about the blank pages in all the other books of prophecy that have missing text."
Chase's expression turned grim.
"There are others with blank places?"
Zed nodded as he smoothed back his hair. He gazed in the darkening window, trying to see himself reflected, but he couldn't. Yet, it was still too light outside.
"Does my hair need to be brushed?" He looked back at Chase. "Does it stick out too much?"
Chase cocked his head.
"What?"
"Oh, never mind," Zed muttered with a dismissive wave of his hand. "The point is, I've discovered blank places in a number of books of prophecy, and I'm baffled by it."
Chase shifted his weight and folded his arms. His brow bunched. He was beginning to look seriously concerned, which on Chase meant that he looked like he thought he might need to slaughter large numbers of people.
"Maybe I'd better stay here for now. We don't have to leave tomorrow. We can wait until you find out if there's some sort of trouble at hand."
Zed sighed, beginning to wish that he wouldn't have mentioned anything. This wasn't really a problem for Chase. Zed shouldn't have gotten the man all worked up over something he wouldn't understand or could do anything about. It was just that it was so blasted odd.
"That isn't necessary. This kind of trouble isn't likely to need to have you strangle it into submission. It's an entirely different kind of problem. This is book trouble. I don't want to burden you with worry. It's my area, and I'm sure I'll figure it out sooner or later. I only wondered what you might think of such a thing. Sometimes it helps to have a fresh view.
Chase waggled a finger over the book. Well, what does that last part mean? That first contest him before they plot to heal him part? You said it was prophecy about Richard. That sounds like trouble, like someone is going to plot against him.
No, not necessarily.
Zed wiped a hand across his mouth as he tried to think of a way to explain it.
The word plot in prophecy often means nothing more sinister than to lay out a plan, like plotting a course of action, you might say. In this case, the passage was talking about those who are his closest advisors, his allies. So when it talks about plotting to heal him, it most likely means that they must first convince him that he needs their help. And then once they are able to convince him, these allies, that would most likely be some of us, are going to set about planning a way to heal him.
Heal him from what?
It doesn't say.
So then it isn't serious. Zed gave the boundary warden a meaningful look.
I believe that may be the part that is blank.
Then it is serious. Richard is in trouble. He needs help. Maybe he's hurt. Zed shook his head unhappily.
In my experience, prophecy is rarely so overt.
But that could be the case. Zed appraised the man for a moment.
We're a long way from needing to dream up things to worry about. In addition, the chronology of prophecy is always troublesome. For all I know, the part we're discussing could have already happened. It could, for instance, be talking about a time Richard had a fever as a child, and I had to find the proper herbs to heal him.
Then it just as well could be past history. Zed turned up his palms in frustration.
It could be. Without the missing text or knowing a lot more about prophecy than I do, it's probably impossible to put this in the context of his life.
Chase nodded, but then stepped out of the way as the door opened and Rika swept into the room. She reached out to take the bowls, but paused when she saw they were still full.
What's the matter? Why haven't you eaten?
When Zed waved a hand as if trying to swish the issue away, she looked over her shoulder at Chase.
Is he sick? I thought he would have scraped the bowl clean by now and licked the smell off the ceiling. Maybe we had better think of a way to make him eat.
See what I mean about plotting? Zed said to Chase. It could be no more serious than that.
Rika surveyed Zed's face for a moment, as if checking for any overt signs of insanity, then turned her attention to Chase.
What is he jabbering about?
Something about books, Chase told her. She turned a growing glare on Zed.
Well, after all the trouble I went to fixing you this meal, you are going to sit right down and eat it. If you don't, then I'll feed it to the worms in the midden heap instead. Then, when you get hungry later and come to me complaining, you will only have yourself to blame. You'll get no sympathy from me.
Startled, Zed blinked at her.
What? What did you say?
I'm going to feed it to the worms if you don't.
Bags! Zed snapped his fingers. That's it!
He held his arms out to her.
Rika, you're a genius. I could hug you.
Rika straightened defiantly. I prefer to accept your adoration from afar. Zed wasn't listening to her. He rubbed his hands together as he tried to remember exactly where it was that he'd seen the reference. It had been ages ago. But how long ago exactly, and where?
What is it? Chase asked. Have you solved the puzzle?
Zed's mouth twisted with the effort of thought.
I recall reading a reference to such an event. I remember seeing some kind of exegesis.
A what?
An explanation. An analysis of this issue.
So then it is some book thing?
Zed nodded.
Yes, exactly. I just need to remember where it was I saw the passage. It was about worms.
Chase cast a sidelong glance at Rika before he scratched his head of thick, graying brown hair.
Worms?
Zed dry-washed his hands as vague recollections ghosted through his mind. Those shadowy memories were real. He was sure of it,
but despite his frantic effort to grasp them and pull them into the light of consciousness, they remained just out of reach.
"Zed, what are you talking about?" Rika asked. "What did you say, worms?"
"What? Oh, yes, that's right, worms. Prophetic worms. It was some kind of evaluation, I think, examining if such a thing might be able to erode prophecy."
Chase and Rika stared at him, as if he were crazy, but said nothing. Zed paced from the table to the corner bookcase and back. He pushed the heavy oak chair aside with a foot as he walked back and forth, thinking. He ran through a list of places that might have a book that would contain such a reference. There were libraries all over the keep. There were thousands of books in those libraries, maybe tens of thousands. If he had even seen the reference at the Wizard's Keep. He had visited any number of libraries in other places. There were a number of archives in the Confessor's Palace, down in Adendrill. There were palaces on King's Row, also in Adendrill, that contained extensive collections of books. There were any number of cities that Zed had visited with repositories and archives. There were so many books, how was he to remember one he hadn't seen for ages, perhaps since he was young? "What exactly are you talking about?" Rika asked when she tired of watching him pace. "What explanation are you talking about?"
"I'm not sure yet. It was a long time ago. Had to be. Had to be when I was young. I will remember, I'm sure of it. I just have to give it some thought. Even if it takes all night, I will remember where I saw the passage. I wish I had my reason chair," he muttered as he turned away.
Rika frowned at Chase as she kept an eye on Zed as he paced. "His what?" "Back in Westland," Chase said in a low voice, "he had a chair on his porch where he would sit and think, where he would reason out problems. That was back when everything started, when Dark and Rawl came and tried to capture him and Richard. They fled just in time. They came to me and I led them through a gap in the boundary."
"Seems to me that there are chairs enough around here. He's practically tripping over that one there." Rika's mouth twisted with exasperation. "Besides, a person doesn't need a chair to make their brain work. At least if they do, they have bigger problems."
"I suppose." Together with Rika, Chase watched Zed pace for a while. Finally, not being one to stand around, he caught the sleeve of Zed's robes. "I guess I'd better go see to Rachel while you work out your solution. I want to make sure she gets her things together and gets to bed."
Zed swished a hand, urging the man on his way.
"Yes, you're right. Go ahead. Tell her I will come to kiss her goodnight after a while. I just need to think on this a bit."
Once he was gone, Rika leaned a leather-covered hip against the heavy desk and folded her arms under her breasts.
"Are you saying that the words of prophecy vanishing was caused by some kind of worm, like a bookworm that eats the paste or the paper?"
"No, it eats the words, not the paper."
"Then it's, what, some kind of tiny little worm that eats ink?"
Annoyed at the interruption, Zed halted his pacing to stare at her.
"Eats? No, not in that way. This is something of magic. A tricky little twist of something clever. If I recall correctly, it was referred to as a prophetic worm, because it could eat away at the branches of prophecy, much like wood boar worms eat away at a tree. It starts with related prophecy, either in subject or in chronology, like wood borers might infest a particular branch. Once established, this kind of worm begins eating away the tree of prophecy. In this case, the branch is the one having to do with the time since Richard was born."
Rika looked genuinely fascinated and at the same time distraught. She straightened and tilted her head toward him.
"Really? Magic can do such a thing?"
Zed, holding his elbow in one hand and his chin in the fingertips of the other, made a low sound deep in his throat.
"I think so. Maybe. I'm not sure."
He heaved an impatient, irritable sigh.
"I'm trying to remember. I only saw the reference once. I can't recall if it was a theory I read, or if it was the spell itself, or if it was only a suggestion in a book of records, or if it... Wait!"
He stared up at the beamed ceiling as he squinted with the effort of recollection.
"It was before Richard was born, I'm sure of that much.
I remember that I was a young man. That would mean that it had to be when I was here. That much makes sense. And if I was here?
Zed's head came back down.
Dear spirits.
Rika leaned in. What? Dear spirits, what?
I remember,
Zed whispered, his eyes going wide.
I remember where I saw it.
Where? Shoving his sleeves higher up his bony arms, Zed headed for the door.
Never mind. I will see to it. You just go about your patrolling or something. I'll be back later.
Chapter 33. With the sun going down, the air was beginning to cool as Zed raced down the broad rampart. The huge stones of the crenellated wall radiated heat it had stored from the hot sun, beating down on them all day. The city far below the mountainside was melting into a sea of gloom, while pink rays of the departing sun still caressed the tops of some of the tallest towers of the keep high overhead. The dying light of dusk had brought a still quiet touched only by the distant whisper of cicadas. At an intersection of ramparts, Zed ran around the corner to the right. Unlike the rampart at the edge of the keep, which overlooked a drop-off of thousands of feet down the sheer face of the mountain, the narrower interior bastion wall had precipitous drop-offs to both sides, yet within the massive complex that gave a clear view of nearly windowless walls descending down into the darkness. Courtyards far below provided the refreshment of open air directly off some of the lower floors within the keep. Zed imagined that people who in the past had worked in the lower reaches of the keep must have appreciated being able to step outside from time to time. As he ran down the narrow bastion path, bridges to various towers crossed overhead. Soaring up before him at the end of the pathway was an immense, imposing wall with vertical rows of projecting keystones for interior floors. There was a grand double entrance door at the base of that looming wall with designs above reliefs of columns carved in the wall beneath the arched stone lintel. But Zed instead took to an opening in the side rail to take the steps down. The seemingly eternal flight of stairs descended down a long sloping lip built into the side of the cliff-like bastion wall. He needed to go down into the lower reaches of the keep, deep within the mountain, to places where no one ever went. To places no one but he even knew existed. The stone banister on the open exposed side of the stairs wasn't very high, and as a consequence, the descent down the straight run of hundreds of feet of stairs with no landings was a harrowing experience. To his left rose the carefully fit stone blocks of the imposing bastion wall. To his right was a drop-off that would make any self-respecting cliff proud. Going down that monumental run of stairs always made Zed feel tiny. He could see little more at the bottom than the jagged formation of dark rock at the base of one of the round towers rising up from the small courtyard. Partway down, Zed realized that he heard footsteps racing to catch him. He stopped and turned. It was Rika.
"What do you think you're doing?"
he called up to her. The wind rising up the narrow canyon formed by the stone walls all around lifted his hair and his robes. It almost felt as if his bony frame might lift right off the stairs and be carried away like a dried leaf on an updraft. Rika came to a panting halt a few steps above him.
"What does it look like I'm doing?" "It looks like you're not doing what I told you to do."
"Let's go," she said, swishing her hand to urge him on. "I'm coming with you."
"I told you that I would see to this. I told you to go patrol or something."
"This is trouble that concerns Lord Roll."
"It's just some information in old books that I need to check into."
"Chase and Rachel are leaving early in the morning. You would be in with Rachel, telling her a story and tucking her in, unless there was something going on that has you really worried. This is about Lord Roll. If it has you worried, then it has me worried. I'm going with you." Zed didn't want to stand out on the open steps arguing with her, so he didn't. He turned and raced downward, holding up his robes in both fists so he wouldn't trip and fall. Besides going on seemingly forever, the steps were frighteningly steep. A fall so high up on the steps could easily be fatal. Finally reaching the bottom, Zed stopped on the first stepping stone and turned back.
Stay on the stones.
Rika glanced around at the expanse of viney ground cover. Beyond were walls on two sides that rose up for hundreds of feet without interruption. Behind was the stairs and bastion wall. To the right was a jutting mass of bedrock from which the tower rose. Why? She asked as she followed Zed across the stepping stones.
Because I said so.
He didn't feel like spending time explaining traps of magic. Were she to step off the stones, the shields would not just warn her, but prevent her from going where she shouldn't be. Still, for those not possessing the proper power, it was always best to stay completely away from shields whenever possible. If the shields failed to stop intruders from crossing this secluded courtyard, the vines would snare them. While the victims struggled to escape, these particular vines would tangle around the ankles. Stimulated by struggling, the vines rapidly sprouted wicked thorns that penetrated into the bone, where they then anchored themselves. Freeing anyone trapped in the vines was a painful, bloody affair, and, more often than not, fatal. Defenses at the Wizard's Keep were not hesitant in their purpose.
Those vines are moving, Rika snatched his sleeve. Those vines are moving like a nest of snakes.
Zed scowled back over his shoulder.
Why do you think I told you to stay on the stepping stones?
He lifted a lever and pulled open the second round-topped door he came to and ducked inside. He could feel Rika practically breathing down his neck. Reaching blindly in the darkness, his bony fingers found a smooth sphere in the bracket to the right. As he passed his hand over the glossy surface, it began to glow with a greenish light. The entry room was small, made of simple, undecorated stone block walls. Overhead was a beam and plank ceiling. Against the wall to the right was a single short slab of slate, built in to provide a bench in case the stairs had left any visitor in need of a brief rest. In both of the other two walls were two dark passageways, going off in separate directions. Along the wall above the slab bench were dozens of brackets, over half of them holding spheres that glowed faintly with the same color of greenish light as the one he had first touched. Zed lifted one of the spheres from a bracket. It was heavy, made from solid glass, but there were other elements fused into this glass, and those elements responded to the stimulus of the gift. In his hand, the greenish cast changed to a warmer yellow glow. He let a spark of his gift lift through the sphere, and it brightened, throwing harsh shadows down the two halls ahead of them. With a sharp jab of a bony finger, he sat Rika on the bench.
"This is as far as you go."
Grim determination was etched on her face as her blue eyes watched him. "Something strange is happening with the books of prophecy. You've been fretting over these books for days now. You haven't eaten or slept. But worse by far is that the prophecies that are vanishing are about Lord Rawl." It was an observation, not a question. He'd thought that his turmoil had been all internal. She had been quietly paying more attention than he'd given her credit for. Or maybe he had just been too distracted to notice her paying attention. In either case, it was not a good sign that he had been so preoccupied that he hadn't even been aware of her marking how absorbed and unsettled he'd been.
"Near as I can tell, you are right in that a great many of those vanished prophecies are about Richard. But I don't think they all are. From what I have been able to determine, however, they all have to do with prophecy pertaining to a time after he was born. That doesn't mean that they are all about him, though. The blank places in the books are extensive. Since I can't remember what those blank places said, there obviously is no way to tell what they were about, making it impossible to know the subject individual of the missing prophecies.
But from what you can piece together, they mostly have something to do with Lord Rawl."
This, too, had not been a question, but a statement of observation, or at least reasoned speculation. This was a Mord Sith asking questions that revolved around the issue of the safety of her Lord Rawl. Zed could see that she was in no mood for any evasive explanations.
"I would have to agree that Richard, if not central, is at least deeply connected with the trouble in the books of prophecy."
Rika rose up from the bench. "Then this is no time for you to go all secretive on me. This is important. Lord Rawl is vital to all of us.
This is not only about the safety of your grandson, but about the future of all of our lives.
And I'm seeing, too,
it is not only important to you, he is important to all of us. If you alone discover something significant and anything happens to you, then we could all be left at a dead end. This is more important than you keeping your secrets. Zed put his hands on his hips and turned away for a moment, considering. He finally turned back to her.
Rika, there are things down there that no one knows about. There are good reasons for that.
I'm not going to steal any treasure, and if you fear me seeing some secret of the ages, then I will be willing to swear on my life to keep it secret unless it is necessary for me to reveal it to Lord Rall.
It's more than that. Many of the things in the lower reaches of the keep are incredibly dangerous to anyone who goes near them.
There are things of incredible danger outside the keep as well. We no longer have the luxury of secrets. Zed watched her eyes. She had a point. If anything happened to him, the information, too, was as good as dead. He had always planned on someday letting Richard know about this. But there had never been any time, and until the problem with the books of prophecy had cropped up, it hadn't seemed critical. Still, this was not Richard who would see these things. What do you think, Wizard? That I will go to town and gossip about what I've seen? Who is left to tell? The Order has overrun most of the New World, and everyone has fled Adendril for Dahara. Dahara hangs by a thread. Our future hangs by a thread.
There are reasons that some knowledge is kept hidden.
There are also reasons that wise men sometimes must share what they know. Life is what matters. If knowledge will help preserve and advance life, then that knowledge should not be hidden, especially when it may be lost right when it could be that it's needed most. Zed pressed his lips tight as he considered her words. He had discovered this secret when he had been a boy. His whole life he'd never told another person about it. No one had instructed him to keep it secret, nor could they. No one but he knew about it. Still, he knew that there had to be a reason that this was not something that was meant to be widely known. This had been kept secret for a reason. He just didn't know what that reason was. Zed, for Lord Rawl's sake, for the sake of our cause, let me come with you. He appraised her determination for a moment.
You can never reveal this to anyone.
Except for Lord Rawl, I will never reveal it to another. Mord Sith often go to their graves without revealing the things they know. Zed nodded.
All right, it goes to your grave with you unless something happens to me. If so, then you must tell Richard what I show you this night. You must swear to me that you will never tell anyone else about this, though not even your sister Mord Sith.
Without hesitation, Rika held her hand out to him. I swear. Zed clasped her hand, and in so doing struck the agreement, accepting her word. When he had been first wizard during the war with Dahara, before he had put up the boundaries and killed Panis Rawl, Darkin Rawl's father, if anyone had told him that he would someday make such an agreement with a Mord Sith over something so important, he would have thought they were crazy. He was grateful that such things had changed for the better.
This is the end of disc number 11. Please insert disc number 12.